You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, episode 129 with Greg Bleakney coming up in the next section. But Greg is a visual storyteller and he's got this agency called wherenext.com. So you want to check that out. Definitely wherenext. And what we'll be talking about everything, Colombia, how he came to be in the position that he's in and so on and so forth. It's quite a tale. So those of you who have the travel bug and who are interested in a more, so let's say, nomadic existence, please tune into this show, episode 129, because it really is a special one. Someone, you know, speaking frankly and openly about falling upwards, really. He really did find a future here in Colombia. So it's a great pleasure to be able to share this with you today, episode 129. As always, we love to hear from people. That's ColumbiaCalling@gmail.com, on Twitter and Facebook, and of course our website, ColumbiaCallingRadio.com. We've been getting a few emails here and there, but it's always interesting, you know, with requests and people asking for help. There have been a few help-related emails that have come through as well. And so, yes, I'm very, very happy to help when I get the moment. I do respond to all emails, of course, as well. We're into March. Well, we're on the cusp of it anyway. Colombia didn't get their first Oscar on Sunday night. But you know what? To be nominated, to be in that final category of just a handful of movies, they're up there, and you know, proclaiming a different Colombia is a positive thing, isn't it? It's positive news. And on one hand, you know, I know that our filmmakers should be lauded here in Colombia, but on the other hand, I feel that, you know, something that is perhaps that can be shouted about for too long is pure escapism of the realities here in Colombia. But you know, they get out there and see the movie. But at the same time, you know, remember that we're in an interesting situation here in Colombia, and of course, tricky as well. It's March. March 23rd, of course, is going to be the supposed date where a political agreement will be signed between the government of Juan Manuel Santos and the Secretariat of the FARC guerrillas. This is a political agreement between two sides. What comes after this, you know, we can't predict, but it's economical. You know, it's a purely economical situation where we work out how a post-accord Colombia is going to develop. And there has been a lot of negativity and a lot of naysaying, but we have to bet on peace, don't we? I mean, we have to. There's been a piece in the BBC about the ELN moving into formerly controlled areas, formerly FARC controlled areas. And now I wonder about this. I think there's quite a lot of Uribismo in there, you know, sort of building it up. I mean, how can the ELN move into all of these areas when they have a cadre of around 2,000 soldiers? They're in strategically important positions already. Border along Venezuela, anywhere that there's sort of illegal mining in south of Bolivar and in other regions. Now, I wonder how that they can stretch themselves this far. So take everything with a pinch of salt, as you well know when you're reading the mainstream media. So anyway, without further ado, we'll take a short break and be back with Greg Bleakney of wherenext.com. And I know you'll enjoy this episode 129. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling. Please keep listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, episode 129, and I'm very happy to say we've got another great interviewee on the case here in the studio here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. His name's Greg Blatney. He's originally from Seattle, but the twists and turns and curiosities of life, he's ended up working here and living here in Columbia. I believe he moved full time to Columbia in 2013, but his story, begins way back from that. He's a photographer, documentary maker. You've got your own company here. You're a bit of a jack of all trades in the media, in a media entity. And so, well, Greg, I'm going to leave it to you to say what it is you do here. Welcome on Columbia Calling.
Thanks, Richard. It's interesting how media landscape is shaped. You kind of do need to be a jack of all trades. You can't just be a photographer these days, and that's what I started out. That's actually what led me to Columbia for the first time, is a job as a photojournalist, and that was back in 2007. But interestingly, a lot has changed since 2007. I know, Richard, you've been here and you've seen the changes, so it's been really great to arrive here as a witness with a camera in my hand, and every year I've been able to come back. Now I live here. But to go through my photos, sometimes I go home and go through my photos year by year, and even, just down at the different plazas around Bogota, going back and looking at my pictures from 2008, 2009, to see how things have changed. And it's really fun because Colombia is changing very quickly right now.
And, that's this kind of social and political thing, but also if we think about the basic changes, the visual changes. I mean, I was up in the top floor of some building the other day looking south towards the center, because we're here in Chapinero at the moment, but south towards the center, so almost sort of 55 blocks south, and that building, the Bacata, that will be the tallest building in Colombia, I guess, if not South America. I don't even know, but it towers above everything, doesn't it?
It does, and it's really interesting when you walk around the neighborhoods of Colombia, or Bogota specifically, in that much like in Seattle, maybe 15 years ago, there's a lot of tear down of old houses. In fact, I used to own a condominium, and it was an old house, 75 years old, dilapidated, and they tore it down and built 3 or 4 different condominiums. And that's happening all over Bogota. Right. But what's interesting is to announce when you're going to actually tear down a residence, you got to put these huge red flags. I mean, these flags are like 20, 30 meters tall, and you got to put several of them in front of the property. So where I live in my neighborhood, I walk around, and it's an up-and-coming neighborhood, where really the return on investment seems to be fairly significant, because it's about every other house that has these red flags, and they're just tearing these things down left and right and building these 8-floor apartment complexes with views of the park, etc.
This is true, I know. I mean, but there's a sort of sadness behind that. Some of the history is going, but of course, we can't stop it. It's the reality of the market and how it's driven. But like you say, these huge flags out there, which kind of give it the feeling of, the circus is coming to town,
Exactly. Well, basically what it tells me is I was in a rental market recently and I was shopping around, and I just try to avoid any of those areas, because that means a year at least, maybe 2 years of jackhammering that you're going to hear from a 1-block radius. And if you have like 4 or 5 flagged buildings on the same block, then you're not going to have much silence. Even Saturday morning, people are jackhammering at like, I think, 7 or 8 in the morning. I don't know what the regulations are.
Because legally from about 8 until midday, but there are some buildings that don't allow it, because as I'm doing a renovation now of my apartment, our building doesn't allow it on a Saturday.
Oh, wow.
I think that's very socially minded there. Let's go back a bit. Colombia's changed. I think it's a nice way to open into this chat here. Colombia's changing. I mean, really, I came to live here full time in 2007, but you were in Latin America and you were exploring the region, but this was 2006, but you didn't come to Colombia.
Yeah, that's right. I used to work full-time in software, and I think I had this late 20-something crisis or early 30-something crisis.
We all have that.
Where I wasn't sure if this is exactly what I wanted to do with my life. So I basically took a sabbatical for 1 year, which turned into 2 years, which turned into about 8 years of being a vagabond.
Vagabonding,
exactly. And so I decided to ride my bicycle from Alaska to Argentina. So that'd be the northernmost point in the Americas, the top of Alaska. Dipped my feet into the Arctic Ocean and then pedaled my way south for 2 years to the southernmost point in the Americas, which is Ushuaia, Argentina. and dip my feet in Ushuaia. Along the way, I got a really just life-changing experience. I didn't return the same guy that I was before I started, but interesting that I, one of the only countries, actually the only country that I did not ride my bike through that was on my route was Colombia, and that turned out to be the country that I came back to, and now I live here full-time. And the reason why is I was in Panama, and I was riding with a group of other cyclists. It's kind of a small community, these long expedition-type cyclists. And I was in touch with a Japanese cyclist, and he was about 2 months in front of me, and he was in southern Colombia at that point in Pasto, and he was stopped by some paramilitaries or guerrillas, he wasn't sure, and they pulled him off into some of the bush on the side of the road and beat him and stole his gear. And that was 2005, 2006 maybe. And he spent some time recovering in the hospital, I believe. And he wrote me and just said, hey, you know, Colombia's been great, but I wouldn't suggest that you follow my footsteps or follow my lead and bike through Colombia. So I made the decision to fly over Colombia from Panama City and to northern Ecuador, where I rode my bike close to the border and continued the trip. And so, I missed Colombia on that bike trip.
But maybe you missed it at a bad time that was appropriate to you, because if you'd had a bad experience, you may not be here today. I mean, you may not be living here today.
You know, but that reminds me, it's kind of interesting in that I'm starting to befriend other expats in Colombia, and there's kind of the status that we have. It's, when did you land here?
Yeah.
You know, so the guy who says, oh, you know, I got here in 1984, that guy has some serious street cred, you know? Yeah. And then those of us that showed up like after 2005, we just don't have the cred because we didn't go through the tough times. You know, we came during the good times, the gold rush times.
So. Yeah, this is true. It's true. We're just not as hardcore as those people. You know, anyone who's been here since the 80s, that's a different story altogether.
But, yeah.
But then they've got that, you know, that 100-yard stare.
Right. They've seen things,
and nothing phases them. You know, it's, nothing at all phases them. It's you know, it's curious, but it's interesting that you know. I guess, but you know, I've actually spoken to various people who've done the Alaska to Ushuaia sort of 2-year cycling trip. In fact, a few of them used to come through Mompox. I guess we got written up on a blog somewhere, so then we got a few more and they would show up, and they were always interesting people. The first to show up was a Dutchman and his Argentine girlfriend, and they were, you know, not a gram of fat on their bodies. They came through and I was like, you know, can I at least offer you a beer? And they're like, no, water please. You're like, wow. Okay, all right, fair enough. But then the best one was a French couple who turned up, you know, their husband and wife, and they'd clearly been arguing, you know, on the dusty miles of road coming into Mompox. And Alba, my wife, received them at the door and said, well, they were like, do you have a room? And we're like, no, I'm sorry, we're all full. But we've had a few of others like you through in the last few days. It's really cool. You guys are great. And the wife looked at her husband and said, see, I told you, everyone's doing it now. which I think is hard. You know, I think, you know, it's far from the truth, because not everyone can do that. I mean, it takes a certain person. You've got to have some sort of mental stability, I think. As you mean, you travel largely alone?
Yes. Yeah, I started the trip actually with my dear friend from university. We rode together, and we were physically assaulted in Mexico on the road by some bandits who were armed, and it was a really sketchy thing. We were very close to being murdered by them, and we escaped, and it really changed the tone of the trip.
Yeah.
And after that happened, he decided to go home.
That's it.
And I continued on my own. He was engaged at that time, so he had something really important to go back to. And at that point, our motivations changed. And I was very sensitive about Colombia at that point. Mm. Actually, you know, it kind of bursted my bubble traveling through Latin America. And, you know, before that, I didn't have much experience in Latin America. I guess I had a very North American attitude about it, that anything south of the border was almost the same. You know, Mexico might as well have been the same as Honduras or El Salvador. Mm. And you know, traveling so close to the ground on a bicycle is a great way to discern the differences between these places and meet people you normally wouldn't meet on a bus type tour or in a plane. I think that's why people commit such a long period of their life to traveling in that way. And it actually brought me to a higher level, I believe, of understanding for Colombia, because I needed to question why these people were willing to murder us for what I consider to be a nominal fee of cash.
Yeah.
And we go through this in Bogota all the time where people get stabbed for their cell phones. And we know it happens because it gets shared on Facebook a million times. And it's something you have to come to terms with. It's a new form of street smarts as someone, you know, someone who's born and raised in a suburb of North America where we have our own problems there. But usually people aren't getting stabbed for a few hundred dollars or a $100 cell phone or maybe even $20. So I was very sensitive about traveling through Colombia because obviously, like most people who haven't been here, it has a terrible reputation.
Yeah, you know, and the reputation will last. Just like, you know, the taxi driver the other day is, you know, asked where I was from. England, the hooligans. You know, it's one of these things that it takes generations to get over, and it will take time. And unfortunately, the stereotypes are being perpetuated by these series like Narcos and other ones. You know, everyone here is a drug dealer. Every woman is out to conquer you in a lascivious fashion. You know, it's just one of those things, unfortunately. But, you know, and being like yourself, like myself living here, we just sort of kind of shrug it off. There is a reality, a justified reality of the situation in Colombia, but equally, we live here, and we live here because of the reality of loving it here and the opportunities that have been, that, you know, that we've been able to pursue because of Colombia. And like you said, we arrived in the gold rush.
Yeah, the gold rush.
You know, right when it was changing. It was right when it was changing. There was a different spirit and ambience because I came down. Here's my kudos thing. I came down here in '98 with an NGO just to travel the Pacific Coast in a canoe, and that's when we had to check in with the local priest in every town, and he would say, "Yeah, los muchachos," which was a reference to the FARC. They know you're here, you know, but because you're working for the community, you've got passage. You know, it's that reality of the situation. But this is a big adventure, okay? So you're on the bicycle. It's a big adventure south, and you know, I like to think that this. Probably, we could say that this has been formative to what you do now. You know, as you said, you started out as a photographer, but of course, just being a photographer, you know, coming in, coming out, going away, traveling, it's a hard graft. That, I mean,
it is. And you know, I guess I need to explain a bit of what happened after I skipped Colombia and I was mountain climbing in Peru. I took a month off the bike just to, you
know, to climb mountains.
To climb mountains, yes. I guess torture another part of my body.
Huaraz or somewhere like that.
Yeah, in Huaraz, yeah. Nice. Great place to learn how to mountaineer. I didn't really have any experience.
Yeah.
It was a skill I wanted to pick up. And I met a group of Colombian climbers coming down Mount Pisco, actually, and they were going up. And we stopped and I told them my story. And when I got to the part where I said, you know, I didn't go to Colombia, I flew over Colombia, they all just got really upset,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Really, you know, Colombians are so proud and they should be, you know, they have this incredible place. And they said, you missed the best part of South America on your bike. You know, you really missed it. And so I actually ran into that group of people several more times as I headed south, and they were climbing different mountains in South America, and they invited me to come to Colombia at the end of my trip. And I did. So in 2007, end of 2006, 2007, I flew up to Colombia and we spent 2 months cycling and traveling around Colombia.
Awesome.
And at that point, you know, I never touched a photo, a camera until my bike trip. And I used a borrowed camera to take some of my first photos from my cycling partner. And then I actually bought a camera. I came back to the States with my photos I'd made in Colombia with those people, and I got my first job for National Geographic.
But talk about, you know, falling upwards, you know, your first job with National Geographic.
Yeah.
I mean, this is some things that travel writers and photographers dream of, you know. This doesn't come around every day.
Yeah, so it was the Adventure magazine at that stage, and they actually mixed my photos from Colombia in with an article that they were publishing about Colombia.
Awesome.
And the guy who took the photos for that original article, he's one of my neighbors now. He's just the coolest dude. He's been here for quite a long time. He's an expat. He's a war photographer. So it's been fun. All these things have come full circle.
Okay.
That we were published, you know, in the same article, and now he lives just down the street from me.
That's funny how these things come together. And so from, let's say, 2007, I guess you were kind of bitten by the Colombia bug.
I was. And at that point, I remember talking to a magazine editor, and he wanted to send someone down to do an article about cycling. And this photographer was fairly well known, and he and his agent wanted a really comprehensive insurance plan, and they wanted a lot of security. And they weren't comfortable with that. And they asked me if I would come down and, you know, and help with some of the photos.
Awesome.
So I started doing every year coming down for a month or 2 months total time. just to do different types of articles around Colombia, and I became, I guess, a little bit known. It was my entry point into some of these editorial departments that, yeah, I can come down to Colombia, and I know how to move around in Colombia and make photos, cultural photos, mm-hmm. and cycling-related photos. So I started coming back every year in between traveling to other places. But Colombia definitely sat in that. Right there at top of my list of my favorite places in the world.
That's it. You were snared. The hook was put in, and that's it. That's it. Now you're living here. Now you're lost. You were found, as they say. You're here in Colombia. But you mean you've made a real, success of it. We see one another, I guess, a couple of times a year, or they go through some hiatus of not seeing one another for a couple of years, or then getting a coffee. And each time we meet up, you're going from one success to the next. I'm feeling left behind, but no, that's the joking aside. It's been amazing, every time we meet up, the new projects that you're working on. And before we launch into those, just say we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back with Greg Blakeney and talk about his work and your production company and everything else that you've got going on here in Colombia. Because really, you've made a significant name for yourself in the field, and people are coming to you. It's not you going out and looking. People are coming to you for this job, for the work here in Colombia, adventure reporting, adventure filming, and so on and so forth. So it's very exciting to know this and to see how it's evolved. So again, this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Greg Blakeney talking further about his successes in Colombia. And we're back, episode 129. We're here with Greg Blakeney. We've been talking about his stories, how he ended up here in Colombia, and a little bit about the realities of Colombia and so on and so forth. But as I was ending that section of the show, I was talking about the evolution of his work. I mean, I didn't know that you weren't actually, you hadn't sort of, let's say, trained as a photographer prior to cycling South America. I mean, and then you were working for National Geographic, so you clearly had the eye for it. I mean,
Yeah, it was something that was a bit of luck. One of the sponsors of my bike trip, we went out and got some people to give us baggage, free bags that you have panniers that go on your bike, and then some jackets and things like that. And when I finished the trip, the owner of one of the companies, and I can say who it is, Outdoor Research, and there's an interesting story there as well. The owner of Outdoor Research is one of the Nordstroms, and Nordstrom is a huge clothing chain in the U.S., and he's one of the Nordstrom sons. And he actually had a really adventurous spirit. He left Nordstrom and he bought this outdoor apparel company. And he really found his passion with that company. And this was one of his first few years kind of taking on that role. Mm-hmm. And he invited me to come and show my photos to his company afterwards. They sponsor trips like this all the time. And it's one of the great things they do at lunch is have people come back and talk about their journeys. And afterwards he said, hey, I think your photos look actually kind of good, and I have some contacts in industry I'd like you to meet. And he sent a few emails out, and the next thing I know, I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with a guy named Corey Rich, who's now probably one of the premier adventure photographers in the world. He's the Nikon ambassador, so when Nikon launches their flagship camera that costs $10,000, he's the one doing all the promo stuff. He's the one who tests it. He's the one who's like the spokesperson why this camera is so badass, right? Yeah. And so he invited me to go out there, and this kind of a really soft-spoken man came out of the woodwork at our hotel. And he said, Greg, Corey's told me about you. And this is a man that was probably in his late 60s, early 70s. And he said, he's told me about you. And I want you to think through all the photos you have from your set, from the 2 years of your trip. And in about an hour, there's going to be a group of us in this room over here. And there's a projector. And you're going to have 1 minute to show us your favorite photos and tell us your story in 1 minute or less about your trip. Huh. And I didn't know who this guy was. I didn't really know much about him. And he turns out to be the former director of photography for National Geographic magazine. And his name is Rich Clarkson. He became a mentor of mine. And probably one of the more iconic people and maybe one of the more iconic living photographers. And he's a really interesting person who's really key to my development as a photographer. At that point, I didn't know photography could be a career. Mm-hmm. I didn't know storytelling and the visual arts was a career. I was a software salesman.
Yeah.
So this was just kind of a stroke of luck that I stumbled into. Accidental, maybe some intuition, I don't know, but it was just something really special happened there in Jackson that led me on a new path to become a photographer. And just after that, I flew back to Colombia and did the Colombia shoot.
Fantastic. No, but this is just amazing. Again, a really good news story, but you had to have the context. Not the context, but the context to get that right. I mean, he gave you the minute, you know, the minute to explain. And right. And that's it, you know. If you made a balls up, I mean, it would have been over.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't bear thinking about truth. I mean, somehow, you know your project, you know your subject, you know you had the eye, and therefore, and then the storytelling capacity. So,
yeah, when I think about how I apply that to what we're working on now in Colombia is for me, photography was never about just making a photo and trying to make a beautiful photo. I'm not necessarily the best like Instagram style photographer. I don't make these kind of iconic sunset shots and beautiful like one-off landscape shots. When I first started making photos on my bike trip, it was really to send my friends and emails back home to just convey to them what was happening in my life, because that was before I didn't have a Facebook account. There was no social media, so I used kind of an email newsletter that I composed every couple months to my friends and family. And I slowly, as I started making more photos, I would string in 4 or 5 photos and put them in a blog or my email newsletter, and just use those to help tell the story rather than just one photo. So I always thought about storytelling visually, and started on this bike trip, and then I met Rich Clarkson, who encouraged me to keep pursuing photography in that way. Keep not thinking about the one photo, but think about stringing together a series of experiences that are represented in those photos to help you tell the stories. And that's something that I've always held dear.
It's very interesting, and of course you got to spend time with these people, like Corey Rich, the ambassador for Nikon, which feathers quite nicely though, because you are an ambassador here in Colombia. You have to talk about it. But, you know, the title of ambassador is pretty lofty. So
this is something that I don't even know if you know this story, Richard.
No.
It's a small world story because it has to do with you.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, I think in 2013, when I first decided to move to Colombia, I'd had coffee with you and you told me about your hotel.
Yeah.
Casa Maria. Yeah. So you said, hey, man, why don't you head down there and hang out for a week? I think I was telling you I need to get out of Bogota or something.
Yeah.
So you gave me this kind of invitation to go hang out. So I went down there and traveled there on my own. And any of the listeners don't know like how to get there. It's an adventure to get to the hotel. You got to cross a river on a canoe. You got to ride on the back of a motorcycle.
There's a bridge.
Oh, there's a bridge. Okay.
It's changed.
Okay. Well, you know, it wasn't an adventure back to another Colombia, changing Colombia. And I was hanging out at the hotel having a beer, and I started chatting with another guy who was there, tipping back a beer too, and he was a Colombian. He spoke perfect English, and we started just trading stories about Colombia, and I think he seemed really knowledgeable. And I looked at him, I think at one point, I said, well, you know, who the hell are you, dude? And he said, well, actually, I'm the vice president of the Ministry of Tourism. And he was hanging out at your hotels because President Santos was in town the next day to do a speech about UNESCO in Mompox. I don't know what's happened since then. So he was there, but he was just this cool dude, man. And he said, hey, you know, why don't you come in and let's talk when you get back to Bogota. So at some point I went back and I reconnected with him and his team, and they invited me to be the ambassador of adventure travel for Colombia. So for the last few years, they've been flying me to different places around the world, and I've been using my photography and video from my agency to present case studies and stories about adventure travel in Colombia. And it's just something that was completely random, and it happened at your hotel.
Oh, there we go, Casa Maria, ground zero for great experiences and future projects. Well, I didn't know that it was the vice president that was hanging out. Very good. I like that. Indeed, that's, you know, I'm glad that came to.
Yeah,
I'm
and actually, I asked him what he was doing at this dumpy hotel.
Oh yeah, thank you.
I know his plug for your hotel is that he loves that place. Every time he goes to Mompox, he always stays there. Everyone else was staying in another place, by the way.
Oh yeah, I know. They always do. It always happens. It always happens. And then after over time, the repeat visitors keep coming back because our service is better. So therefore, there's a plug for my hotel. But no, things have gone incredibly well. I mean, you know, we're having this chat, and then you got to know Colombia, sort of flying in private planes all over the country with various other connections. I know that you've had involvement with, what are they, the sort of flying doctors type?
Civil Air Patrol.
Civil Air Patrol that go out to sort of, let's say, less well-connected parts of Colombia, which could actually be anywhere upwards of 70% of the country,
right.
Offering, you know, sort of medical assistance. They go out with a troop of like dentists and gastroenterologists and you know, everyone, you know, to go out to these communities. And I know you've been out there with mutual contacts and so on and so forth, and seen some really quite, let's say, out of bounds areas of the country in that kind of thing.
Something that really led me to move here is that there's so much of Colombia that's totally undiscovered. If you want to move to a place where you can truly still discover something new, this is the place. And I've spent since 2005 basically traveling full-time all around the world now, and still Colombia, I come back, and I think it's something that a lot of Colombians don't realize how exciting it is for us foreigners to talk and have coffee with a friend, and we pull out a map and we point to certain places and no one knows what's there. And we don't even know how to get there. We don't know. You know, there's a road, it was accessible, it's a military presence. And so my first commercial project, and this is kind of a transition I made in 2013 from shooting as a photojournalist to a commercial project, was to shoot an underwear campaign, an exotic destination with some adventure travel clothing. So we came down to Colombia, and I hired a local tour operator to help organize it. And he turned out to be a pilot. And he's like my brother now here. I love the guy. And he's like my adopted family. And we've continued to be great friends. And he invited me to come back and said, hey, Nate, when you come back, I'll fly you around. And so he tried to tie this back together. His father was the founder of the Civil Air Patrol. He's a second generation Bush pilot and also owns a travel operator here. And he's also the most punctual Colombian I've ever met.
It's true, yes. I know him too.
He's very punctual. And so we need that when we need to surround ourselves with people that are punctual when we're foreigners, or to keep ourselves sane and to move forward in our business pursuits here in Colombia. I've learned that. And there are many Colombians who are punctual, but you got to find them.
Yeah, I don't. You know what? It's one of those things that I just can't let go. Punctuality. I can't. And if it means I arrive on time and everyone else is half an hour, 40 minutes late, so be it. I just can't. I can't not be on time. It's against my whole sort of, I think, genetic makeup.
Right.
It's like, you know, being English, if I see a queue, I have to get in there. You know, I just have to stand there. But no, but it's true. But, you know, a punctual Colombian, you know, without, you know, let's not disparage Colombians. Of course, there must be more than one. But
he's a very punctual Colombian and well organized. So I started flying with him. He'd invite me on up to fly with some of his friends, and over the years I've developed relationships with other pilots. And then we've gone out and documented some of the Civil Air Patrols, and now that I have an agency here in Colombia with more people working with us, we actually volunteer to do videos for that Civil Air Patrol. The idea is we're building a video campaign for them to help raise money for their missions. And it's something that's amazing and it's incredible, because I have this group of really talented Colombian videographers, and we can talk about that, how that happened. But these people are, you know, adventurers. Everyone's a climber or an athlete or a cyclist. They love being outdoors. They're a traveler. But when they go on these Civil Air Patrol missions and they land in the middle of these small towns, really been forgotten in the country, they come back and their jaws on the floor. They've never seen this kind of, they've never seen these forgotten places in their country before. You know, they've grown up in Bogota.
Yeah.
They've had the privilege of growing up in an era where you can drive from city to city for a fairly significant range of the country, and they can explore. But when you really fly over the jungle into a, you know, dirt tarmac or dirt landing strip, and go explore these towns where there is no healthcare, and the government was basically a criminal organization or someone who didn't necessarily have access to the doctors and healthcare these people needed. And they're seeing this part of their country, and they're just, you know, come back to Bogota where it's modern and sophisticated, and it's almost more rewarding for me to see them experience that than experience it myself.
But it's the reality of urban and rural Colombia. There's just no... There's the lack of institutions out there in these places where you go to, and you know, it's just the reality. And actually, if you get the opportunity, like you have, to take Colombians out to see this,
it's an ability that it just opens the mind into the reality of what's out there. Not just, you know, obviously the beach holidays in Santa Marta and Cartagena and stuff where every Bogotano goes in a high season, or to the coffee zone on occasion, etc., etc. I mean, to get them out into Guaviare or somewhere like that, or into Caquetá or Casanare, it's all about the reality of Colombia. So, I mean, you're doing what I would say is, you know, sort of almost like it's almost like social work, because it's making people aware of a reality. So I think that's amazing. That let's just give your company a little plug. It's now this company you have is wherenext.com. Wherenext.com is what it's called?
Yeah, Wherenext.
Wherenext. And so you do, I mean, you are basically, explain it.
Sure. So it started with the fact that I was coming down here as a photojournalist. And then I had this commercial underwear campaign where I actually had to hire assistants and people helping me. And I realized that as a photojournalist, you're really a lone ranger a lot. And that's exciting and interesting. But I'm a social guy. I like being around other people, and I like being challenged by other people and challenging them. So it was really great for me to be surrounded by those people in Colombia. And actually, the same guy who's the pilot, Hernan, he suggested at the end of that, when I expressed this idea of perhaps I should really transition to more of an agency model. And he said, you know, Colombia, specifically Bogota, has become the capital of film and videography in Latin America. And there's a lot of new programs being filmed here right now. And there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of education and government support built around that. So he said, why don't you come back down here and we'll hang out. You can crash at my place and you can interview some people and just check it out.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was living in San Francisco and I was going to do the agency there in San Francisco. And I decided to do it, come back and do this in Bogota. So what effectively this has become is a production house and also a digital, we call it visual storytelling advertising agency. So much now, the way people consume things is on their smartphones. And it started out with text, and now it's going to photography, and then the future, kind of the transition happening now, is people are really consuming video. So video adds a lot of credibility for people when they're researching, especially travel. And that's what we focus on, is adventure travel. So our post-production house here is in Bogota. So I've been able to just recruit these really talented young Colombians, videographers, editors. Really exciting time for this in Bogota. And most of our clients, I'd say like 90% of our clients right now, are not in Colombia. They're based in the U.S. They're based in Europe. We work with ministries of tourism all around the world. So we go out with our Colombian film crews and our Colombian team, and we film in those locations, and then we bring the footage back and we edit here in our studio.
And they pay you in dollars.
Yeah, that's nice.
I have to bring that in. They pay you in dollars.
And this is just really something that's completely blown me away, is this devaluation of the currency. Because I moved here when I first...
It was hard.
I moved here, it was 1,800 pesos per dollar. It's 3,400 pesos today. I mean, that's like double.
Yeah.
And it's... for me, it's great making money in dollars. But it's really tough for Colombians. They just can't leave the country right now. And I know Colombians have great careers. They have great jobs. I mean, they used to be able to travel everywhere. And now it's like, whoa, Europe's pretty spendy.
We're benefiting in like the Casa Maria from the staycation at the moment. Right. We can really see it. And of course, foreigners coming to Colombia because it is so affordable. You know, you come with your euro, your pound, your dollar. It's so affordable. My room price is dropping from $65 or $75 a night to $40, $38. You know, it fluctuates. It's painful, you know, but equally we're making up for it in numbers. But it's a hard time. It's a hard time with this devaluation, this collapse of the peso. But I don't know. How long? Do you have any idea when it might continue until?
I don't have an idea, but you know, I just met with our financial advisor, and we're doing all of our planning in the future at 2,500 pesos. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're betting on.
Yeah.
balancing out at 2,500. So I don't care if it's 3,400. And this is probably talk that's not necessary on this program, but we just do our playing for 2,500.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. And what we, you know, one, there's something that we've got a, you know, good sort of 8 minutes left. And I think there's an interesting situation to talk about. I mean, you were working recently on a project in the Chocó. You were in Nuki and Coqui and these areas, and I helped you on this. But you brought in, there were a film crew came from Australia,
mm-hmm.
and the presenter came from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a scholarship for another sort of cameraman. It's great because you're bringing other people who'd never come to Colombia to Colombia.
Right. So this also has something to do with the devaluation of the peso.
Mm-hmm.
It's and also all this talent that's here in Colombia. There's a lot of foreign brands,
mm-hmm.
and we have them on our client roster. And this is a brand that's an Australian brand, and we've typically done productions for them in other parts
mm-hmm.
of the world. And we had a conversation. We just said, look, you know, you can come to Colombia. We can do this here.
Yeah.
And they said, right on, let's do it. You know, so they brought their own team and we produced everything, meaning that we organized the travel, logistics. We brought in fixers. We brought in people to talk about specific subjects. Like we brought you in to talk about safety.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really something that was awesome to bring these guys in. Another client we brought in that I'm really proud of, because it hasn't been done before, is Columbia Sportswear.
Yeah.
And they're based in my home area in the Pacific Northwest. They're the second largest lifestyle brand in the world now. Most people don't know that. They're huge. And they brought a group of 12 journalists down here. These are some of the top journalists in North America from all the biggest adventure magazines, Men's Journal, Backpacker, Outside. And they came down to launch their new material called Outdry Extreme, which is like the newest innovation in outdoor gear since Gore-Tex. All right, so it was a big deal for them.
Yeah.
And they chose Colombia, and we did the same thing. We brought them up to the Paramos in a North American summer, and they got rained on for like a week.
Yeah, like the wettest parts of
wettest
the world.
Part. Yeah, and they loved it. And actually, they just wrote me, and the data's in, and this is the most successful PR launch they've ever done anywhere.
Wow.
And so it was huge kind of street cred to Colombia and the people, the Colombians that were involved.
You as well. I mean, you know, your company.
Yeah, which is based on Colombian talent, you know.
Yeah.
So it really kind of is a proving ground that we can do great things down here, you know, from a business perspective. So I'm really proud of that. And that led to the idea of inviting this Australian company to come. And this is something that as someone who works in my industry, we go out, we produce a video, we do the pre-production, the creative, we shoot it, we bring in the talent, the actors, we execute the concept for the brand. What are you trying to say? What product is this for? And then at the end, usually you pack your bags and you leave.
Yeah.
Right? This Australian company, they have a different ethos. So part of this, we went and filmed in the Pacific communities of the Chocó.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scholarship winner involved. And his scholarship that he applied for and won was to come and study videography and filmmaking with a well-known Australian filmmaker. And so we looked for a destination that was kind of a nice backdrop for that. And that was the Pacific Coast, flying into Nuki and exploring
mm-hmm.
the Chocó. When we got there, the scholarship winner really became close with this community of surfers, young surfers
mm-hmm.
in Termales. And it's a club of surfers. And it's not necessarily a surf project, but it's actually a kind of a youth development
mm-hmm.
project. A lot of these people, they don't have other places to go. This Afro-Colombian community. Richard, you did some of the research for this piece.
Mm-hmm.
And when we left, the client called and said, look, what can we do to help these guys? And we put him on the phone with the guy, Australian expat here, who's helping to organize a surf club. And he said, you know, we could use education.
Mm-hmm.
We need to train these instructors, some, you know, in an academy that's certified, so they can train the next generation. So if tourists come, maybe we can do like some sort of tourist program
mm-hmm.
there. We need a boat. We don't have a boat. We need to be able to move people to the breaks around this area. And they say, okay, well, how much does that cost? And so the client basically is right now raising $10,000 for them. Is going to write them a check for $10,000 to get the boat, send two of their instructors to Costa Rica to get certified in one of the best places in the world for surf
mm-hmm.
certification. And that's something that for me to have this foreign company come in, have an incredible shoot, accomplish their goals, and then give back to the community. I mean, it's awesome.
And it's you know, it's direct. There's no, you know, the money goes directly to that community and to that club. And it's, you know, it's social. It's complete. This is how we enable social change.
Mm-hmm.
And through the fact that you know, pick that area, source the people, source, and this is a good news story.
It is. It's a good news story. It's just That's what I want to be doing in my life as a, you know, as a career. It's really, it's something you, when you're stressed out about whatever night, you know, and you go to sleep and you can close your eyes at the end of the day and like you feel good about this.
Yeah, it's so when I got the email from you saying that, you know, that they're going to do the $10,000, this is just excellent. You know, this is just because it's such an impoverished area. You know, it's one of the mega diverse areas on the planet, one of the wettest areas on the planet, the Chocó, but of course it's just been overlooked and, you know, forgotten by the Colombian state forever. I mean, you know, there's no direct access, 24 hours from Buenaventura by boat to get there, you know, an open seas, or you have to fly in, of course, which is not everybody can do because there are financial limitations. And of course these, you know, impoverished Afro-Colombian communities that sort of eke out an existence.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a big deal.
You know, to give people an idea of how sometimes challenging it can be to get to this place, which is actually a tourist destination the government's trying to promote, the runway is in such bad shape that none of the jet planes can fly there anymore. So Satena is the government airline. They can't fly and land on that runway anymore. So you have to take chartered flights. So in Bogota, we have to take a commercial flight to Medellin, and then Medellin switched to a chartered flight. And then because it's also one of the rainiest places in the world, and there's a low cloud cover, it's difficult to even land there as a chartered flight. So I was fortunate in that some of the guys from the Civil Air Patrol actually, during a scouting trip early in the year, they flew us in because we couldn't get there any other way.
Just crazy, isn't it? The realities of Colombia. But it's been, I mean, what a great chat. And I know that the listeners out there will really appreciate this, you know, this episode, because it has been really open and you know, it's been a chat about an evolution in your life and your work and everything, but also good news story and all about Colombia. It has been really informative. So, you know, I invite those of you out there listening to look up Where Next and wherenext.com, as you would expect. And of course, you know, they're available for all sorts of jobs. They're here in Colombia. But take this moment to say thank you to Greg Blakeney for, you know, time out of his busy day to come and talk to us, little Colombia Calling. But thank you. Thank you for coming in and thank you for chatting to us.
All right, Richard. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your beautiful dog sleeping on my feet and keeping my feet warm throughout this interview.
Yeah, well, you know, he's comfortable with you because you've got dogs, you see, and you know, dogs know that. Anyway, so anyway, wrapping up this show, it's been a good one, hasn't it? I know we'll get some emails from people who've enjoyed this, and so this has been episode 129. Myself, Richard McCall, with Greg Blakeney of Where Next, wherenext.com, if you want to look up their website. Of course, get in touch with us. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com, columbiacallingradio.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and all the obvious social media evils that are required today. But it's been a fun show, and tune in next week because we'll have another interesting interviewee on the show. Thank you for listening.